any major increase in so-called traditional services, that is to say people responding to facility. Now, we're small, I mean, and we are well known in the community. My guess is it would be about the same. I haven't talked with Larry Alkire, is county director in Upshur County. He'd be a person you want to inquire over there. Harry, keep forgetting Harry's last name. Well, anyway, it's Harry. He's the Barber County director, and you could call him and talk with him to see what he thinks. But we haven't seen that major response here. I think people are still right now still busy trying to figure out like places to stay and getting that thing sorted out. I noticed that a lot of houses down the road here just still aren't not moved into yet. People are still working on it. The county clerk, for instance, Nina Buchanan, I was talking to her, and she said they were just beginning to work on her house, which is down on, I think, maybe 4th Street, something like that. So I think there's a numbness probably with a lot of people. My guess is I run into people on the street and talk to them. They're not there. They're here, but they're not there. I mean, you talk to them, and you don't necessarily talk to me, you know, like, where were you at the time of flood? I mean, I haven't been doing that. These are people I know. They know me, know who I am. I'll stop and talk to them on the street, and there may be a little bit of a more affection giving, you know, a little hug or something, wanting to be close or something like that. But we'll just talk, but I'll get the feeling that I call it a numbness or not being there. They are there, but it's like not fully. It's like the old spirit or the old mind has put itself slightly back away, trying to still continue to, you know, compute or take stock of the situation and sort things out. But there's
mild
a
mild kind of shock, maybe? Or?
Yeah, I think, okay, you could call it a shock, yeah. You could call it a shock. I like to use the word numb because I don't know whether, of course, you know, you can be numbed into, shocked into numbness. But these are people that I know are going at it, you know what I mean? They're going at rebuilding, they're continuing. Maybe shocked, still sense of disbelief, sadness. I hear a lot of that as I, you know, not here, but as I walk around and talk with people, sense of sadness that things have been lost and, you know, part of their history. Talking to an elderly lady, her photographs were all washed away, and you know, and the sense of belonging, the sense of, you know, saying, well, I'm not going to move back here in this town. I'm going to move over to another town nearby, but I'm not going to come back to that house. It's too painful. Now, whether they do or not, I don't know that, and I'm not talking a large number of people, but I'm just saying a few people I've met, the sense of sadness, a sense of having lost and never having regained it and lost something that was important to them. Not the house per se, you see, but the sense of the personal belongings, things that they had that was part of the family history. Again, I don't see these people as, you know, if I see them on the street and talk to them, that's one thing, but I don't see them as coming down to talk to me about feeling sad and feeling depressed. History would say they will deal with that within their family, whether they get in to see a medical doctor for medication or not. If it gets real heavy, they'll come, you know, but it has to be really heavy. As I said to you earlier, we don't see the, I think I'd like to work sometime in a mental health office in a big city, just for the fun of it, if you excuse the expression, where people come and somebody wants to come and talk about how they can grow and, you know, like a center for human development. Here it's like you're at the tail end, and you get the tail end of situations which are almost impossible, you know, and like people who are really mentally ill, like a schizophrenic, manic depressives, where you can't really do that much, but which but who demand a lot of your time and energy. Now, we haven't seen any increase, you know, in that level since the flood. But we see people usually at the tail end, see. Or like if they're going for a divorce, they've usually already made their decisions, and then they come and they probably have made so many decisions already that cannot be reversed one way or the other about anything and under the sun, that it's almost like a hopeless or helpless situation. You're just trying to get them to figure out what they could figure out, as opposed to somebody who may be just contemplating a divorce and saying, well, I want to be able to work this through and I want to be able to get on with my life. You know, I don't see that. I see them usually after like a couple comes and wants to talk about maybe getting a divorce too fast and wanting maybe to think about going back at it. But, you know, then the problems are more immense than it would be if maybe the other side of the fence. But
sounds in a way to me as though what you're saying is that people are pretty darn resourceful.
Yeah. I'm glad they are. I mean, Lord, if they needed to. You know, I'm not indispensable, thank heavens, and I'm glad that I'm not, and I'm glad that nobody would be thinking that, you know, they couldn't handle things without us or without any other organization, you know. I think the same way with the churches. There may be some response more to the churches, but people have dealt with these problems before, and they accept them and they go on with it, you know, and they're not going to wait. And I think that's a good trait, there's that sense of individualism, you know. In people that maybe it works against them in the long run in certain areas, in terms of they don't really get together and cooperate for like real good push for economic development and change in the community life. They put up with a lot of stuff that, coming from the big city, I don't think I would put up with if I were younger and all that stuff. But might work against them that way, but it does a beautiful job for them when they, you know, like the job situation has been horrible here for years, and they go from job to job, but they're resourceful, you see. And when you maybe you're working with somebody who's going through that, they're bitching, but they're not, they're still working at it. And there's still some sense of hope, but at the same time, it's kind of like a muted hope, you know. The town will probably rebuild in the same spot. In the same buildings, and maybe a few will be changed.
So there isn't a sense of a loss of community or dislocation or upheaval, social upheaval in the town?
Well, it might be in terms of some of the, like...
It's hard. I guess things haven't really settled yet.
No, they haven't settled. You don't know what... You really don't know.
Families missing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think this community may be more fortunate in the sense that I've been reading in the Elkins Inner Mountain that the Barber County, and I think it's Randolph County church groups are still trying to get people to canvas areas to find out where people are and so on. But they did a lot of canvassing over here, so in a sense people, you know where they are. But I remember standing on the bridge one day, maybe like 2 days after the flood, and a car coming down, and they couldn't get across the bridge. Well, there wasn't any way to get across, and they were really upset because they had been on the other side, which would have been over here, the night of the flood, and had tried to convince a certain relative to move out, and relative wouldn't, and they left. And they couldn't get back down over the Sugarlands Road, and there they were, and, you know, there was no communication. I just happened to know who they were talking about. It was one of those weird, you know, things. I happened to know who they were talking about, and I just happened to know, having talked with somebody, that person was safe. But there was no way that, you know, I don't know why I knew it, in the sense it was just standing around there. And so I could say to him, well, that person's safe. I don't know where the person is, but I know that person is safe. And, you know, well, how can I get to him? And, you know, all you could say is, well, you're going to have to turn around, and you're going to have to all the way up, and you're going to have to risk going down Sugarlands. But there was no telephone, see? You couldn't call anybody. Telephones, what? How long they were out? For a long time. At least that. In terms of the other side, like Hamilton, they didn't get any telephone over there for good maybe 2-3 weeks, you know. Some of them still, I think, at the end of a month, were without telephone. And of course, there's the water problems, things like that. But I don't really know. I honestly don't really know how it would be to experience it myself. I mean, I talk with people who, you know, who lost their homes, and I went down into, later on, I went down into Hendricks and tried to deliver some heaters and talk to some people. And, you know, again, it was just a sense of being overwhelmed. And I thought, if I was overwhelmed by looking at what happened, I wondered, how about them? But the thing about it is, they're talking. One little old gal who was a community official here, somebody had come walking up while I was talking with her and brought her a picture. And I said, "Is this you?" it was a picture of her when she was young, you know, and she was as tickled can be to find that. And her family, of course, was a little more aware of what was going on. I think she was somewhat in a state of shock. Although she was functioning, she just wasn't, you know, she could appreciate the picture, but yet it was as if, well, I really haven't lost it. And then it dawned on her she had lost more and something like that. But I was amazed at, I mean, I was feeling rotten and didn't know what to say or how to say, you know. You want to say, well, how are you feeling? Almost afraid to say, how are you feeling, you know, because you almost expected that they would, you know, be so overwhelmed. But the thing that I was picking up on is they were talking, you know, and it was a need to talk, the need to share. You know, I just stood there and talked. And but I was kind of fortunate. I could, you know, leave. I could find my way out and go back up to the school and then eventually go to my house. But these people had lost them. But I don't really know, you know. I mean, I've talked, of course, with people. But my guess, though, is in talking with people that there's an awful lot of stress, and there will be stress, but they're dealing with it, see? Now, maybe we need, as mental health people, to do something different.
Like?
Well, like, I think partly maybe the outreach workers walking around, just being around with people, working through this entire organization to get things organized and find out where people are. And just the idea of people being aware that people know that you are you and that if you have a need, they'll come back and check on you. I think that's a very important thing that is new to people here. You know, I mean, not that we haven't had human services and so on, but there hasn't been that kind of outreach to people. So I think that's a great thing. What will come, I don't know. I talked with a couple of businessmen about maybe a group, you know, but you know, they were sharing some experience about what they had gone through, and I was saying, well, you know, you think it would help to just sit down and just have a rap session? And they said, yeah, but this is like right about Christmas time. And they said, well, you know, we're just trying to get ourselves on the feet right now, getting back in, so maybe we should think about this in February or something like that. See? Not that they weren't having all these pressures, but it was like maybe there'll be some kind of a time, you know, when then a lot of people suddenly realize they've been under all this pressure and were almost near collapse. I don't know that. I think there will be some, but I don't think it is a major thing, again, because of the people. You know, they haven't known economic well-being, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that much. And even the business people that I've talked to that lost, you know, some of them that were involved in the flood, I remember one fellow was more, had changed his whole outlook on life, not whole outlook, had changed his outlook on life. It had really caused him to think about what was more important, you know, what was the really serious issues for him, as opposed to just going on with business. He's going to go back into business and he'll have a store again, but he'll never be the same. I don't think anybody will be the same. I don't think I'm going to be the same, even though I'm not, again, personally affected in that way. I was affected due to and thinking that a lot of the stress that more of the stress that my wife was under than my own personal stress, and having to help her and be with her through those times, it's not going to be the same. But so I suppose it's not going to be the same for others too. But in what ways, I don't know that.
What has been the theological explanation for this whole disaster? Does the community hold God accountable in some way?
I would have a problem. My guess is because of the nature of most of religion in this part, but most of them would probably hold God responsible, but not in the sense of blaming him, like, you know, you're an awful God for doing this, but it's like, you know, the recognition that you're a frail and feeble individual and life is transitory and that's all the way it's going to be, but we don't understand what's going to happen to us now, but when these things happen, we won't have the answers now, but someday in the glorious future, all this will be made up and we'll have our answer. And so I think religion tends to probably help provide a sense of consolation. I'm not to people who feel that, you know, this helps them to accept it. It's just part of life. And I think that there will be those who will blame God, if that's their theology, you know. But there are some, I think, that their religion is, even though they go to church, okay, and maybe hear their preacher say, well, you know, someday we'll understand, I think they also recognize the reality of nature. You know, they've lived close to nature and they know it can be harsh. And I don't think they necessarily, a lot of them don't necessarily feel there's a connection between a disaster and God. And from the point of view of God bringing it on, you know, they might have prayed high to heaven and, you know, as they rose from the first floor to the second floor to the attic when the flood was coming, keep praying. And when they got to the top of the roof and the flood didn't hit them, you know, felt the prayer was answered. But realistically speaking, I don't think they would then say that the person whose house was washed away, you know, was therefore being punished and they were being selected, or, you know, that I don't think they're that, I'm sure there are a few of them, but I don't think there are many people who are that naive or that self-righteous that way. I think that most people accept this as just, it's a hard life, and that's just the way it is. And well, maybe God is responsible because this is God's world, but, you know, it's just one of those things we have to accept. Besides that, religion in these parts of the country is more of a socializing influence. I think people go to church in this area more for the social event than for the so-called theological or religious. They go, and probably during this flood, I've talked with a few ministers who said that there was an increase in attendance and worship and at the prayer meetings and so on during this, you know, when people could start moving around again. And my guess is that religion provides that sense of solidarity, that sense of you are related to other people and somebody cares, and everybody can talk. So just like relief centers provided that atmosphere, you know, and eating and so on, I think religion has always done that for these parts of the world. Still do it. I've heard some preachers, you know, on the TV, of course, you know, attributing this to God and punishment, and it's an evidence that the world is coming near to the end. But I mean, the people aren't acting like they're getting ready for the end. Looks like they're getting busy building their houses up again, you know, and just going on with it. Now, I don't know about the people that might have some, you know, real serious questions in their heads about, haven't resolved that yet, you know, about God and pain and suffering, and would feel that maybe that, you know, their faith is lost, their religion is lost. I'm sure there'd be some people like that. But my guess is most people in this area would either lay it to God, but that it's God's world, or they might even be willing to give it the flip of the coin, which is the devil, you know, and the devil has done this to them to test them, and well, they're not going to let the devil get too big of a hold on their leg, And so they're going to show the, you know, I mean, so in a sense, the religion works for them that way too. You, the opposite side of blaming the devil, and then it's a big power contest. And so the devil is testing you. It's not God who has done this to you. God is testing you, so you better, you can, I mean, the devil's testing you, and you got to be faithful to God to show God that you can stand up under these things. I mean, I think that some people would be responding that way to it. You know, my own personal philosophy is it's just, that's the way it is, you know. You live in an imperfect world, you're an imperfect person, and there will be these things. And I don't attribute them to anything but the imperfect world, so I don't have any religious, I mean, it doesn't affect my religious belief in terms of in God in a negative way. I think you have to accept this, and I think God works in a limited world with limited people. And that's all there is to it, you know. I think there are a lot of people who buy that too, but most of them probably just will buy the idea that it's just the way it is, it's the world, and it'll be all explained in the future. And it seems to satisfy. But again, I think that's because religion serves that socializing function where you get together and you sing and you talk and you meet other people. And I don't know if they ever listened too much to the sermons. Yeah. I remember talking, I don't know if I told you that story, I remember talking to a gal, not related to the flood. I talked to a gal about the fact that one Sunday morning I was real lazy and I turned on television and there was a local preacher on, and he was telling a story about Abraham, and he mentioned that Abraham's wife Sarah was a really good wife because he would, when he came home from work out in the fields, he could stick his feet up and she'd bring him his shoes and his paper, you know, he was modernizing it and so on, and a cool drink of milk or whatever, and that this is the way a woman was. She really worshipped, and this is the role of a woman. So she stopped by the house that night, and I said, come on now, you really believe that stuff? Because this is a professional lady. And she remarked to me was, well, we kind of like pick and choose. And I think that's what most people do anyway, you know? Pick and choose. But again, I really feel these people, the people are doing a tremendous thing in terms of the way they're responding. And I wish there was some way I, as a mental health professional, could be there to encourage them to, you know, keep going and the naturalness of this kind of stuff, and that you can work it through, and that's not the nature of our work, I guess, in mental health. Except you just do it incidentally, you know. People are not going to wait to be pulled in here as clients, go through our system and the process and so on. But I don't know.
What about other government agencies? What about the FEMA? Are you picking up any?
Well, this community, no, nobody plans for a disaster, of course, and this community, this is the second disaster, you know, was a communication, in my book, was a communication disaster. Everybody was trying to do something without anybody knowing what anybody else was doing, and federal people came in, the state people came in, and there was really no coordination. I know there were attempts at it, but you didn't know where to go, and I, as a professional, not knowing where to find people and where to go, I wondered how frustrated the average person might be, or the person who had experienced losing something, you know, loss in the flood. And I think there was a lot of confusion. I think there's a lot of ill will created, tension. I would think that governmental people ought to recognize that as just part of their job, you know, that people are going to see things one way. Maybe they saw things from a different perspective, and that perspective was needed. But I don't think government is ever geared to work fast, as quickly as you know you'd want to do it. I've heard a lot of dissatisfaction with FEMA. I've heard some people speak highly of them. The people who have found their trailers speak very highly of them. The people who have gotten relocated and all that jazz, same way with the Red Cross, you know, are highly complimentary. The people who are still waiting are not. And there are some people who feel they could have probably rightly so, gotten a better deal out of somebody, whether it's FEMA or probably FEMA because they're handling all this financial stuff. You know, like your home wasn't completely destroyed, but it really was. And so it's not listed as a house to be torn down, and yet you're just left with nothing, and you're going to get $900 or $1,200 to repair it. And, you know, $900 isn't enough to do 2 days' work with a carpenter. So I think there's a lot of that. A lot of satisfaction with the Salvation Army. My feelings is that a lot of good response there. I mean, they were there right away. You didn't even know they were there. They had opened up their little, you know, truck with their food and so on, giving out, I think, probably maybe the day after the flood they were in town. And they were also on the other side of the town, you know, doing that. And of course, the Red Cross, of course, they can't come in until it's an official disaster. And once it was declared, they came in. I think they offered the people a lot. But again, everything was centralized on this side, see? The Red Cross was over here. FEMA was over here. People on the other areas, and even down in St. George that were stranded, wouldn't have been able to get to these services. And there were no communication lines. It was such a disaster, that some of this confusion and disorganization and et cetera, I think has to be downright attributed to the fact that, you know, you couldn't even have a communication system going. You know, Human Services quickly got on the other side of the river and opened up a second center over at Hamrick School and met with a lot of people, and they did, I think, a tremendous job that way. Firemen did a tremendous job in saving people's lives and continuing to do things. The complaints that I've heard have been related to, you know, the confusion between the people in the community who didn't appear to be knowing what they were doing, and maybe they didn't, but some competition or competitiveness between them, and touchiness. But I think touchiness is a very natural thing to come by in something like this. Not that people are wearing their feelings on their sleeves, but, you know, for a while there, I felt like if you touched anybody, they'd probably go up in smoke. You know, I mean, everybody was burned out. I think the professionals, you know, more than anything else, because there's a sense of, and I suppose FEMA and the Red Cross were feeling that too. I don't know that, but I got the feeling that when I was talking with other professionals, they weren't listening to me. And I don't think it was because they didn't want to listen. It was just like they were information overload. And they would start talking, and you wondered who they were talking to. You know what I mean? In the sense that they were just talking, you'd ask them a question, they weren't answering your question. They got sidetracked, but it wasn't that they didn't want to answer your question as much as sometimes it's just information overload. They were just over the hill on that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Now, what'll happen, you know, in another, I don't know, what's happening to these people who really were involved, like the Red Cross and the Salvation Army and Red Cross, Salvation Army, the firemen, as to how they're getting back on. You know, what I see from where I live, the firemen are meeting every Monday night and rebuilding the fire station, things like that. But I don't know about the other professional people as to whether they're, you know, I assume they've gotten some balance now. But I think the community has to come together again. And this, you know, this side, this is like a more naturally being a town as opposed to Hendricks and Hamilton. But I think that this community probably has a task of coming back together again. I think there's been a lot of unfortunate misintended, unintended ill will created too. And hopefully that's on the burner, you know. I don't know. I think that, I don't know how they'll do it, but I think that there's been I just feel that there's a lot of, people are far apart in terms of the county commission, in terms of the community here. in terms of it, what they're expecting of the other outside people, like the federal people, and maybe we're just coming together, you know, all fall together reasonably so in the future. But I think there's a lot of maybe there should be some community meetings, but nobody wants any more meetings right now, you know. Maybe just bull sessions and so on. Maybe they need a scapegoat too, you know. Maybe we should parade FEMA or the Red Cross or somebody or Arch or Jay or
run a few effigies.
Yeah, you know, and get all together and do that. Maybe that's what we need to have. It might help because, you know, we all have to live together, you know. And there are a lot of things I know have been said between people, you know, that in the heat of frustration and so on, that probably some of them wish they'd never said it, but having been spoken, it's been, you know, written, as it were. And some of that will come about naturally, maybe, but I don't know how it really will occur. What's to come in the next couple months? I don't know. I really don't. I said we have this, you know, these two outreach people, and they've hired some more people to come in, and I really feel that a counselor in the schools would be a great thing to have, but we don't have one. And I don't know whether our agency is going to be aiming toward trying to help that way, but I think outreach is the answer here. For, you know, we have enough to do, we in terms of our staff here, to do the main line, working with people with severe mental problems, so on.